Ladies and gentlemen, happy Labor Day, and welcome to an very exciting episode 34 of Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans. Get your sticky paws off me, you damn dirty podcast. Before we get into why we decided to name that this podcast by that particular name, we want to address some brand new spanking news. The Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans family has grown. It's a girl, guys. It's a girl. We've got a girl.
Yes.
If you remember back to episode 25, the lovely and talented Taryn Lopez had joined us. We have now decided to make her a permanent member of the team. So, a little applause for that, please.
Thank you. Honored to be here. Honored to be a part of this.
And we are delighted to have you, and we're delighted for you to add your brand to the beef, to the wine, and the shenanigans.
Yes.
Yes. So, a couple of other things about this particular episode. We're actually recording it in Junior's restaurant. In picturesque Fort Greene, Brooklyn. Try the cheesecake. Tell them SVP sent you. And yes, that's right. I am Stephen Van Patten. And as always, joining me are
Mark Abbott
and
Kirk Johnson.
And of course, Taryn is here. That's right. That's right. It will be a foursome from now on, ladies and gentlemen. So there you go. Now, getting back to what we decided to do today. Yes, Kirk.
I need just one shout out real quick.
Do it.
To the passing of Steely Dan's backup vocals and guitarist, Walter Becker. And you know Steely Dan is...
Your favorite band. We established that in episode 17, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. Just wanted to give a shout out.
And our audience of one, Brian Durr, he concurs with that.
I'm exhausted. I walked 10 minutes to get here. Yes. That was better be good.
And there you have it, folks. Interactive media. All right. So we decided that for this Labor Day, along with actually doing a show while the sun was up, we decided we were going to unpack the entire Planet of the Apes franchise.
That's a lot of
luggage, baby. So, without any further ado, because we do only have an hour, I'm going to throw it right to Taryn.
Oh, God. Okay.
With, and so, basically, the brief history is a whole bunch of movies. We've got Planet of the Apes from 1968, Beneath the Planet of the Apes, 1970, Escape from the Planet of the Apes, 1971, Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, 1972, Battle for the Planet of the Apes, 1973, the questionable Tim Burton Planet of the Apes reboot from 2001, Rise of the Planet of the Apes 2011, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes 2014, and of course the very recently released War for the Planet of the Apes, which some of us just saw a few hours ago.
Yes.
Now, basically these movies grossed over $2 billion worldwide. Rod Serling of Twilight Zone fame actually penned the first script. That's
1963.
Yes, and a gentleman by the name of Paul Dean actually kind of took over for most of the 70s.
Yeah.
20th Century Fox entity made like $2 billion worldwide. It's a huge, huge sci-fi statement. So that's why we're gonna, you know, just kind of unpacking it. And those of you that are listening, you know, if you're not familiar with any of this stuff, we'll probably say a few things that may spark your interest.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we go. So now, Taryn, try to remember back to the first time you saw a shirtless Charlton Heston running through the desert or sometimes on a horse, and sometimes with a half-naked, nice white lady.
Another movie?
That might be several movies.
It's several movies, actually. Bolero.
He had a theme.
But anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So. And on another little trivia note, we've got the Planet of the Apes is actually the first time the makeup artist won an Oscar. By the name of John Chapin, especially given, given you know where we were from just a technology standpoint in the world. But Taryn, please.
Well, for me, I saw Planet of the Apes the first time when I was a child. I was maybe, I want to say 5 or 6 the first time, and it, like, when I got to that ending, I understood the gravity of the realization. Like, it was there was no spoilers back then. It was the 80s, and yeah, I was just rocked to the core with that ending, and it's amazing because it's... This was just one book. This was based on a book that was turned into a movie, and it spawned all of those sequels that you listed just a moment ago. Like this story is such a weird and such a wonderful idea that it has just kept in our imaginations. This idea of like how the world could just so rapidly change, and how like we could become like the second class species on Earth, and like it's so frightening and so scary, and it stays with us to this day. Like there's still movies being made about this. Like I just love the fact that this franchise has survived the test of time, you know, and like rewatching the original today, like, you know, it's very dated, obviously. It's Charlton Heston, it's very campy, but the core of it, the morals that are taught in it, they still rock today, and it still stands the test of time, I think.
So, well, that brings me back to actually, I was going to ask you if you thought that it still holds up, which I'm pretty sure everybody agrees.
Yeah.
The first one, at least, definitely, it's a timeless classic. Now, I'm going to jump right to Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
And Mark, I have a very important question for you.
I like the two.
It was not well received. Critically wise, it was not well received. Made its money, not well received. Yeah. But Mark, the question for you is the only good human a dead human?
Well, in looking at that society, I would agree. What's interesting about the makeup of that series is how, and we find this out later, in a couple of films later, about the particular laws that the apes have, and about killing their own. And I think that when we look at the reasons why the apes evolved and what the humans did to the planet itself, to allow humankind to procreate and grow again, and thus decide, well, you know, I want to take back what's mine. In that society, yeah, I would agree to it.
I will say, for Beneath the Planet of the Apes, they definitely really clear cut. The orangutans are basically conservatives.
Yeah, right.
Chimps are the liberals, and then the gorillas are the military.
Right.
And it's illustrated in such a more definitive way, I think, in Beneath than even in, because in Planet of the Apes, when you're first watching it, you're just kind of like, well, what the hell, you know? And it's almost like they play Dr. Zaius as like the intellectual or the guardian of the secret.
Right.
But in Beneath,
not the aristocracy, but the intellectual aristocracy.
Right.
Yeah.
They're the scholars and
the ruling politicians.
And then the civil servants are the chimps.
Right. And then that dynamic changes slightly for the sake of Beneath, I think. You know, just my opinion.
Yeah, the wigs and the hawks and the wigs.
Right.
The hawks and the
hawks and doves.
Well, also, you have to remember also when these movies were made, they were during a very volatile time in this country.
Absolutely.
So dealing with the Vietnam War and all of those kind of, and the protests, that they kind of mirrored what was going on during that time, and the ideologies of kind of rolled over into those films.
To that end, should people of color be offended?
You know what? No. What's interesting about that question is that I thought about that as I'm watching the film.
Absolutely.
Especially the fact that the gorillas are the ones that are supposed, not only the military, but the crazed military, like to the point where it's just like, you know, they're just completely violent. And I'm like, why the gorillas? Mm-hmm. Like, I kept asking myself that question, like, why were they the ones chosen? Because in their society, the way gorillas live, they're not really like, I mean, they're protective of their own, but they're not violent like that unless they're pushed to that point.
Right.
So it was kind of interesting that the ideology was choosing them as the
violent species as opposed to the chimps. And I wonder if it's part of, if you don't mind me saying, I wonder if part of that is just Hollywood projection. Because, you know, you still have the studies of you know, anthropology stuff already right. going out and doing these things, but still there's that Hollywood, you know, King Kong. Was a, you know, in Hollywood, there was always the big gorilla that was the violent, scary thing. Mm-hmm. It was never the chimp. Chimp was always the cheetah.
It was always the friend.
The chimp was the cheetah, yeah. And Tarzan. And then playing into the whole, you know, I thought that was just pure Hollywood, to be honest.
And just to jump into my personal experience for a second, I've actually, for the sake of stage managing, I've actually dealt with a chimp on a soundstage before, and I have to admit, it was one of the few times I was deeply, deeply terrified.
They're scary.
Because they're scary, and they're very strong, and then there's all these rules about making eye contact and all this other stuff. Yeah. So it is kind of interesting how, for the sake of the movies, they decided to juxtapose that a little bit.
Right. And if I could just also preface the fact that there are no monkeys in Planet of the Apes.
Right. Well, actually, monkey is the racial slur.
If you call them a monkey,
that's right. That's their racial slur.
I would like to know what's
about the monkey.
Yeah, pretty much, because the monkeys...
They might have died out.
Good ad with the cats and dogs.
Exactly.
Well, also in the 70s, they're probably thinking, well, you know what? Everybody needs an N-word.
Yeah.
What's their N-word? When they were writing it, you know? Okay, so... not to spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but Beneath the Planet of the Apes ends rather definitively.
Yeah.
Which
such a downer.
Super downer.
There's even a narration at the end to just like cement it.
Right.
It's done.
Look at the narration. Or just like
that sounded like. Actually, I have to look into it, but it sounds like.
I don't think it was Orson Welles. I would have recognized that.
I would have said John Huston.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Maybe.
Something like that.
It could have been John Huston.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Kurt.
Yes.
Escape from the Planet of the Apes. Let's call it. Even though overall, Escape was actually reviewed decently, but as far as the jump off, getting this thing started with Cornelius and Zira, basically, for all intents and purposes, would we say that's the most, the least plausible of premises presented in the entire franchise, and yet without it, the franchise does not survive? Is that safe to say?
That is very safe to say. I'll be honest, I'm still trying to, I might be wrong. I could have sworn they did like a throw off explanation that the ship would return back. Right?
No, it went into the ocean, and they had to drag that lake or that ocean to get that ship out and get it unwaterlogged and take off and have suits that fit them
and a chimp that no one had ever heard
and
of.
Enough fuel
Dr. Milo.
Dr. Milo, right.
That's right,
the doctor.
Poor Dr. Milo.
Yeah, Dr.
And they did all
Bada.
Of this, and they did all of this before the planet blew up.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
like
while,
right
so
after
while
they
was
split
a fight,
up from Taylor,
right after
they left from Taylor, and they went right in the. We have to get the ship out of the ocean.
Right.
And it's just the two of them.
Meanwhile,
maybe like
yeah. And meanwhile, weren't they on trial for treason in Beneath the Planet of the Apes?
Dr. Zaius promised them, like, you know, you guys are going to be in
so
place.
Maybe they kept them tied up in the Forbidden City for a little bit.
So Cornelius Zero. Zira and Milo, they really get an award for multitasking.
This is literally Mondo Planet of the Apes.
And they found the thing.
But
yes.
Like,
yes.
Nobody ever said.
Well, wait, there's two ships, right?
No,
there should be two ships.
No, there should be two ships.
No, he's right. There should be two ships because Taylor comes in one.
But that one got destroyed on impact.
And Brent comes in the other.
That one got destroyed on impact.
Brent,
they talked about that
the second one got destroyed on impact.
Yeah.
And the other one actually sank on impact.
Yeah, they had to get the other one out of the
way. So if you can look, and this is the funny, this is the weird thing. Suspension of disbelief is a motherfucker.
Yes.
If you can suspend your disbelief that apes is talking and taking over planet Earth, then you can suspend it a bunch of monkeys can.
Yeah.
But I think if you can suspend that the civil servant wing of the Planet of the Apes, chimpanzees, were able to use not just their head, but some physical force to drag this ship that has been probably sinking for a while since the entire first and second
movie. Mm-hmm.
Right? Dredge it up, clean it out, and figure out where the buttons move. And then shoot back into time to the present
1973.
Day, 1973. So that Zara can have the awesomest of dresses. And Cornelius can get like the coolest.
And how about that?
They were like the swing, like mod apes. The mod apes. That's what I want to call them.
They did good.
If things had, I know, if things had gone, if things had gone the way they were supposed to, they would have been on Laughing.
Yeah, that's for real.
They would have been on Laughing.
Or
Hollywood Squares.
Yes.
For the Block, Cornelius and Zira. Right.
One more.
Exactly.
You know
what? One more banana to eat.
But unfortunately, Escape from the Planet of the Apes doesn't end well. Does not have a happy ending.
You know what? I gotta say, love Ricardo Montalban.
Oh yes, yes.
You do not love Ricardo Montalban.
Oh,
for real? Yeah. When can you never love Ricardo Montalban? Right. Rest in peace, Ricardo.
Yes.
And the I gotta say, it was the saddest. I'll say that. You know, if Beneath the Planet of the Apes is the action movie, right? The 70s action movie, the Wild Bunch, right? The Wild Bunch of Planet of the Apes. Because at the end, you're good guys and bad guys, everybody gets a bad one.
Yes.
This is pretty much your what? The Endless Love.
Oh, snap.
People of Planet of the Apes, like Endless Love of Planet of the Apes.
Oh, snap.
It's such a sad... Look, we went through, what, how many movies? Two movies, if you count
this one, yeah.
Of Cornelius and Zero.
And we are attached to them at this point.
Attached ain't even the word anymore, man.
Mm-hmm.
They lived a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, well, shit, man, she can talk shit to him and he ain't gonna try to eat her. You know what I mean? So, and for them to, spoilers, if you guys haven't seen it.
Mm-hmm.
For them to pass, to get murdered. For Cornelius and Zira to be murdered in such a manner that they were, and still had the forethought to save their child Caesar. It's still and that last shot, that very last shot of the chimpanzee. I'm sorry, that even I didn't realize that there's gonna be another one. I didn't know about the conference. But it's still even after I knew about Conquest, I still hurt. I still actually hurt after seeing it.
I have to admit, I was very sad at the end of that movie myself.
Yeah, I mean, and like we're saying, aside from Back to the Future, DeLorean, Apes, it still has a place there, Mom.
Definitely.
I mean,
definitely.
The fact that they killed the baby.
Yeah.
And they show that. It's not like
well,
one
that's
of
the
those
point. They're literally out there to
like,
kill the baby because they're scared of what's going to happen if that baby lives.
He's still called G2, right? It's already
The thing. And so the fact that...
Yeah, that's crazy to me that all those movies are rated G because, to be honest with you, that just means we just didn't give a fuck about kids at that point.
They said the movie... Fox Studios considered Planet of the Apes a family film.
Mm.
They said they were worried after Escape that they would lose their G rating. Really?
Hey, really? A little worried.
A little worried.
Yeah. You know who else was worried? Caligula. They were worried.
Hey, by the way, funny thing to mention about us. And this is pertaining to maybe the first and the second Planet of the Apes. So was Charlton Heston the Sean Bean of his time? Every movie Dr. Charlton Heston was in, he gets a bad one.
Yeah, but he made it like a political statement. He died a martyr.
But
Sean Bean isn't that bad. Sean Bean just dies well.
Okay.
He's not like, I'm awesome because I die well.
Right.
Charlton Heston made it all by himself.
I die for the people.
Yes. He's always dying for humanity.
Because even he said that with
or apes and timbers.
Beneath the Planet of the Apes, they wanted him back.
Yeah.
And he said, well, how about you kill me at the beginning and then just keep on because they needed the name to sell the film.
Right.
Yeah. And then later on, they said, well, how about this? We show you at the beginning, and we kill you at the end. And he's like, okay, that'll work.
And I heard for Beneath, whatever he got paid, he actually donated it to charity.
Did he?
Right, yeah, he did.
Oh, that's nice.
Charlton Heston.
Well, then
that's
all
right. Nice.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny? Even though he ended up being like an NRA nutbag at the end, he marched for civil rights.
Yeah, he was a humanitarian.
Now, you know, so it's like some people are just complex, you know.
Like, rap music.
Much like, yeah. He probably heard NWA, and he was like, you know what, I need to go get some guns. Because this
civil rights thing was a bad idea.
Yeah. I might need to rethink this. These dudes going to end up breaking in my house.
It's a complex world.
That's right. And when they break into his house, they're going to say, invade! Invade! Right. Invade!
Oh, shit, so mad.
Yeah.
I saw you had around your house. My mama loves you.
So,
Escape is just...
And of course, since the baby survives...
Yes, Caesar survives.
He's not Caesar at first.
He's not Caesar yet.
He's not Caesar. He becomes Caesar.
He takes that name.
That he's just cuddly.
He's just Milo Jr.
Yep.
When the movie starts.
Wait, whose baby is it?
That's best.
That's awesome.
People are complex, and so are apes.
Intelligence makes you complex.
Exactly.
Zero might have thought Milo was just that right kind of quiet.
So Conquest brings back Ricardo Montalban.
Yes.
That's messed up. Well, it was pretty tight in that pod,
I'm just
right?
Saying, bro.
So Conquest brings us to Conquest of Planet of the Apes brings us to a grown child of Cornelius and Zira.
Mm-hmm.
Starts off as Milo. And they're running a circus together.
Right. Yep.
And the exuberance of youth causes the young ape to scream out in public, which then basically causes a whole bunch of stuff to unravel, including Armando, going out like a G, basically. He's like, I'm not snitching, I'm going to jump out this here window.
Word.
Now, there's talk about how Conquest, especially once things really get rolling and they're fighting the police and the whole thing, there was open talk, actually, about how it was kind of loosely based on the Watts riots, a familiar topic of beef, wine, and shenanigans, minus the werewolf, of course. So what are our general thoughts on that? Because it is a brutal, and again, we're talking about movies that were rated G. The last half of this movie
is not G at all. It should not be at all.
It could be more subversive, you can even go as far as saying that.
Right.
It's, you can go, ape on them, the cops.
Yeah, to be honest,
so that's interesting. You're right. Yeah,
but this was the first one that actually was about like race issues. Like, it was interesting that you guys brought up the whole race thing before, because I'm sure it came up, but it actually wasn't like that wasn't part of it. This one was literally like the apes equal. This is the civil rights movement of the apes.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, this is literally that we're watching right now. So,
1973.
Yeah. I think it was really brave. Like, I'm saying brave. In today's time period, it's not brave to like reference those kind of things, but at the time period of taking something that was considered a family film and putting something that is so obviously referencing something from that time that people would recognize and that people would be like, oh shit, maybe we have to rethink like our stance on this because we're seeing these other characters go through it. I find that really brave of the director to actually put that on screen at that point in history, you know?
Well, you know, it's interesting that because the franchise wanted to keep going, this was an inevitable thing that was going to happen.
Right.
And there's a part of me that wondered if the studio, when they sat back and watched that last cut of it, we're like, wait, what?
Like, what happened? Did we just do?
And basically, they're like, well, what did you think was going to happen? We had to, you know, we had already made it clear that there was a rebellion.
Did you guys watch these movies?
You know, it's not like George Lucas was sitting in the room and forgot that in part one of Star Wars, you never told us about Qui-Gon or any of these other things. You just start showing up out of nowhere. But I think that I have to agree. I think it was a brave statement to literally. Well, you know, the last film we kind of hinted on it, and this time no,
they're towing the water in that one. This one is like, no, we jumped in.
We have to go in on this, and we have to face it. But the inevitable, because once again, we're going to get to this point where the question was, how did this all end up? And we're literally, it's funny because it's almost like they're doing a prequel without going back and starting from the beginning.
Which is what we now have just done, the reboot.
So what they did was they literally, with Escape, created the prequel. Just throwing in that whole thing with the spaceship, just basically saying, because these three showed up when they did, this is what sent the cycle of things going down the line.
Right.
And I wonder, in the fact that it is supposed to be a family film, if this was supposed to be night now, go home and talk to your kids about this.
I think you kind of had to.
Yeah.
Which was kind of a weird thing. They cheated because, you know, they all thought it was a silly premise anyway.
Right. It's like Talking Apes.
It's Talking Apes.
Oh, no, but they snuck in some morals in there.
Yeah, somebody who's writing science fiction novels is like, you know what? Why do you like science fiction? Right? Somebody from Star Trek or somewhere around there. Because, right, science fiction is supposed to be that thing where it's supposed to mirror or show us what we should do or what we shouldn't like, what we always hope to be like in terms of human beings. Mm-hmm. Right?
Absolutely.
And what's the word that we're looking for here? It's a social commentary.
Right? That's
the big thing in science fiction, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So I guess Fox was thinking, Talking Apes, how can you make that social commentary? And somebody did Conquest.
Well, there you go. All
right.
All right. So we're at the halfway point, and we're not even out of the 70s yet, so we got to crank a little bit.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Taryn, Battle for the Planet of the Apes. Ape has killed ape.
Yes.
First of all, in going back to what Kirk was saying, it is kind of it's a morality play in the sense that the now Caesar has now seized control, at least, of a large camp of humans and apes living together. And he finds out, much to his own chagrin, that he can't trust one of his own.
Yep.
who tries to lead a mutiny and actually kills his kid. Mm-hmm. Now, it should be noted, this is the worst reviewed of all the movies.
Yep.
But do you think that's fair?
You know, I honestly really dislike this movie, and I think it's the weakest of all of them, because they kind of put themselves against the wall here.
Mm-hmm.
After Conquest, it, like Mark was saying, it basically led to this point where it's like, now what do we do? It's like, we're at the war, now what's the moral that we're teaching at the end of this? And they kind of had to pussyfoot it a little bit, because you couldn't really go Planet of the Apes. They didn't want to show, okay, humanity's going to get wiped out. So they kind of pussyfooted around a little bit. And I do like the way that they ended up concluding the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
with like how Caesar wanted humans and apes to work together, as opposed to how, you know, if you rewatch the original ones, whenever Dr. Zaius would talk about the lawgiver and everything, and about Caesar, he would talk about how they were adamantly, humans are evil, humans are just bad. And in this one, we're actually seeing Caesar saying, no, humans are actually okay, like, we can find a way to work together. So he was going for that. But I find it really interesting that rewatching this, the last scene of it is that you're seeing kind of like the lawgiver actually telling these kids, thank you, he's actually teaching these kids about, you know, the past and about working together and everything.
Right, and the kids are playing together.
Yeah, the kids are playing together, but as we're zooming into the statue of Caesar, the last thing you see is an ape pull the hair of a human.
Yeah.
And then you see the statue of Caesar crying. And the question is he crying because he's happy, because he's seeing humans and apes work, you know, playing together and working together? Or is he crying because he sees something in the future?
Right.
And the fact that the last thing you see is an ape pull a human's hair, mm-hmm. makes me feel like he is seeing the fact that we're never going to be peace. Like, this is an interlude. Right now we're at peace right now, but at some point it's going to be a tipping point, and again, humans are going to end up, we're going to end up at the Planet of the Apes. We're going to end up with humans subservient to man. Subservient to ape at some point. You know?
Yeah. And it's going to, the battle.
Yeah.
Going before
Conquest.
And they had that the black character who's part of the police administration,
mm-hmm.
the governor. And he was that the voice of reason for Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And you wonder if he was just written in there already because this was too violent and against human, like in terms of water riot.
Mm-hmm. I wonder.
That it's apes and humans.
They had to have a human that represented the good faction of the human.
Right.
Being,
I wonder, and they have, again, another guy who's supposed to be his brother.
The son.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that was also just a thing they wanted to shoehorn and make it more palpable in terms of endings. Because in the end, it should be really the situation where, like, after they take out the violent humans, everybody gets to battle.
Yeah.
Like, humans should actually start regressing at
that
point.
They should be regressing. But the fact that they end on this happy note, it's kind of like, you know, were you guys just chickening out of going to the cool thing, or were you guys trying to make a statement? I'm not really sure.
Right, yeah. Well,
yeah.
Here's, I get this takeaway. Think Terminator.
Oh, I try not to.
Here's the interesting thing as I'm sitting there watching this.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if because of Cornelius and them coming back, did that change how this timeline was supposed
in
to
this
play
movie
out?
They actually discuss that. They talk about different timelines, so it's possible.
Because the way they explain what happened to mm-hmm. to the dogs and cats,
mm-hmm.
they still don't actually say what it was that where this virus came
from. It's a virus that happened.
So it could have been because these three came back. They may have brought something with them that there's a writer somewhere that probably wrote that in, and they were like, yeah, no.
We don't have time for all that.
We ain't got time to go that deep into it.
Yeah.
And so they backed away from that idea because I'm thinking the same thing you are. I'm like sitting there going, well, these people don't seem like they're going to be crazed, non-speaking.
So like, did we change the timeline, or are we just before that actually happens? Yeah.
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 Well, I got you.
Ape virus.
Wow. Speaking of viruses, so in 2001,
Milo infected Zero. That's why C is
no, not that. Not that virus.
Oh, okay.
You trying to...
You know what? Right?
I'm not going to let you turn Cornelius and Zira into some Real Housewives of Planet Apes.
You leave their happy family alone.
I'm not letting you do that. But
Zira was a good girl.
But, okay, so here's... So 2001. So, right, Battle of the Planet of the Apes is received so poorly, goes so badly, that the franchise goes dormant until 2001. 2001, Tim Burton, of all people, ends up in charge of this reboot. Now, the superior acting of Tim Roth and Paul Giamatti aside, I'm just going to come out and say it. The story is atrocious. It's
terrible.
Just, it's hot garbage on an August afternoon. It's just, it hurt me. It hurt me. Between that and the Dark Shadows reboot, I almost want to do Tim Burton bodily harm. I mean, I wouldn't. I'm a nice guy and all. But I'm just saying, I've thought about it. Mm-hmm. So, anybody got any other thoughts?
Yeah, hell out of Brooklyn. The only good thing about that movie was the soundtrack.
Okay.
Yeah.
Danny Elfman's soundtrack is probably...
Well, Danny Elfman always...
Yeah, but given what he had to work with, like, when you think about how soundtracks are done, mm-hmm. and you're sitting there watching the film...
Yeah.
I just see him like, what in the hell? Alright, you know what? Let's just keep pacing.
And wait, so he's being rescued by a chimp that he lost in but is it a chimp?
Yeah. And they think it's a like, god?
What? Yeah.
Seamus.
Seamus, yeah.
It's so bad I remember too much of this. Seamus.
I will say that the costumes and everything, like visually, the movie is gorgeous. If you just put it on mute and just watch it, you can enjoy that
and
movie.
And the fact that they have armor.
The armor, oh my god.
They have Charlton Heston in there, in one of his last roles playing. Oh
he was he's the father of Zane. The father of Zane or whatever.
Of Kim Rock.
The bad ape.
He's the bad ape.
He's the one. Yeah, that's why he says, damn them all to hell.
Like, everybody.
That's him reprising his line.
Once again, the dead Charlton Heston.
That's what I'm saying.
Dying Charlton Heston is the greatest Standing actor up. Ever.
And what's his name? Who played the head of the gorillas.
Ship.
Duncan. Yeah. I mean, makeup and performance aside, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. But I don't know whose story this was. You know, I don't know if this was one of those.
Brett Ratner wrote
it. I don't know if this was one of those. It was locked in the vault. And somebody was like, hey, look what I found. A script from Planet. I know exactly who to get to direct this. Right. Like,
it couldn't have made less sense if he had just thrown in Edward Scissorhands just for the hell of it.
I almost wish he did.
Probably could have given you a ball to play to do it.
So anyway, moving on from that, we have the current trilogy, which now that I've seen it all, I have to admit, I really enjoyed it. They tighten up the science that basically brings us the premise with the whole Alzheimer's thing. You have James Franco. Bearable, you know. Yeah, he's actually like, yeah.
He wasn't bad.
After last night's HBO The Deuce, I'm actually looking at seeing Frank a little bit there now.
Oh, you saw that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All right.
So he's good in that.
He's actually good in it. I'm wondering if like my. Not to cut, not you know. Real quick, I always think it's not so much the actors are horrible.
Mm-hmm. It's sometimes the material.
It's material and the director.
Absolutely,
Keanu Reeves.
Absolutely.
Hello.
Absolutely,
Nicolas Cage.
Again, 100%. Bokeem Woodbine. We go on about that. But so Rise. I mean, really sets it up nice, but again, with all the it's an interesting mix of touching and brutality.
Yeah, yeah.
And it does get brutal. Right, that fight on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh, man.
Is crazy.
Yeah,
and so well done. Mm. And real quick, so that brings us to Dawn, and that Dawn, Planet of the Apes, in like brings Koba to full fruition. Yeah. Who and Koba, for those of you that didn't see it, he's a character. He's an ape that's brutalized in the first movie.
Yeah.
Brutalized, mostly at the hands of a gentleman by the name of Steven Jacobs, played by, if I can say the man's name right, David. Oyelowo.
Yeah.
And Koba gets him at the end of Rise.
Selma.
Yeah, he's a solid actor. Seen him in a few things. But he is a consummate heel in Rise.
Exactly right. Yeah.
He's a consummate heel in Rise. He gets killed in Rise, and Koba, you think, you know, he's got his revenge, he's cool, the whole nine. No.
No.
Koba can't get over the trauma, and, you know, basically goes rogue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad, because the interesting thing that I thought was that it was kind of, in a way, it was a throwback to the storyline from Battle for the Planet of the Apes, where Caesar is again dealing with one of his own turning on him.
Yep. Right.
But it's also, I mean, it's also way better orchestrated.
Yeah.
I thought.
Caesar's always trying to get Koba to come back.
Yeah. Right. He always believed in Koba. He always gave Koba the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. It was only when it was like proved to him because Koba had a gun in his hand that Koba was just irredeemable. That was like, yeah. But he always gave him the benefit of the doubt. That was his boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that you know, when your boy turns on you.
He saved Koba, you know?
Yeah. That stinks.
Uh-huh.
And that's properly illustrated in Dawn. Which brings us to War. And interesting.
What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
But you can make some good movies about it. Exactly.
It worked out well a lot of shit in this one.
So, Koba returns in a sort of Shakespearean kind of way. Because he's like the
haunt of Geppetto.
Right. Like the ghost that haunts him at different intervals. Great performances in War, I thought. Woody Harrelson was very menacing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Love Stephen Zahn.
And Stephen, is it Zahn or Zahn? Either way, stole the damn movie.
Yeah.
The damn movie. And what's crazy is he's like a character actor who's been around forever. He's like our age.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, been around forever, and this is like a huge thing for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I can imagine that there's going to be lots of new roles for him coming out of this, because he killed it. Anybody else have any thoughts?
Did you?
All these movies, I can't help but, I can never, ever, I have a problem actually just finding anything redeemable about the humans. I'm like Team 8 all the way. You know what I mean?
That's what I love about these movies.
Yeah.
Because, like, we're actually going to Team Ape right now, and you know the next movie is Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
So when they come out with this new Planet of the Apes, we are now in the exact opposite of any other position that we've ever been in. Every other time we've ever watched Planet of the Apes, we've always been like, we're in the human's point of view where it's like, oh my god, how'd this world get like this? No, we know exactly how the world got like this. We understand why Caesar did what he did. We're on the ape side.
Right.
So when the guy from the Icarus that was referenced in the first movie that they made, when that guy lands in the next movie and is like, oh oh my God, what happens? We're actually going to be against him. We're going to say that he's the fossil.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's going to totally change our perception of Planet of the Apes now, because we're now on their side. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I'm really looking forward to this movie.
We had a point of view.
Yeah. It totally shifted us, because we saw how it all happened, you know?
Which is kind of like an escape from the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Team Zara and Cornelius and Milo.
100%.
All the way. You know, they were the good guys.
And they set up for everything. Like, the fact that they had Alpha and Omega in war.
Yes.
Like, that was the name of this group. And how, spoiler alert, they get snowed in at the end and they're trapped underground. Oh my God, it's setting it up for Beneath the Planet of the Apes. So if they ever want to continue it, they totally can.
Right.
And like now we know how they get
Alpha Omega. No way.
Yeah.
That shit blew up.
That blew up in Beneath the Planet of the Apes. But right now, that whole bunker was called the Alpha and Omega bunker.
Oh.
And they were saying that there's more weapons deeper
down.
We never got to see
weapons. You're right,
but a bunch of people got trapped down there, and I'm guessing they're going to stay there for a few generations.
That's a nod to Beneath.
What's interesting to me about the use of the terminology or Alpha and Omega is how it kind of sounds like Trump speak.
Oh, yeah.
Alpha and Omega. That's literally, I will not be replaced.
It's kind of a final solution, so yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, that was my thought. That actually kind of bothered me a little. Bothered me, but then it's like, again, getting back to the fact that sci-fi should have positive social commentary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've always said, if you're a racist but you're into science fiction, you're doing it wrong.
Right. Yep.
You know, like, real talk. So I feel like that was a nice little mechanism, but at the same time, it was also like, it was disturbing, because it was like, it's so subtle yet so spot on.
Several times he refers to the Holy War, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he does refer to it as the Holy War.
And that's the problem. And all those guys want to live in peace.
Yep.
You ain't trying to mess with nobody.
Right.
I just want to climb a tree, maybe catch a banana and a nut or two.
But you know, now I mean,
love under the waterfall.
without myself seeing war, I'm now tempted to go back and read the book. Because apparently in the book, their society was more like our vision of the future, of the human future, with cities and cars and vehicles.
And mechanized machinery.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I want to do that now is because the whole premise of the original Planet of the Apes was that he went 700 years into the future. So we never got a vision of the past.
Right.
The question is it worth now, if the next film is Planet of the Apes, to go back and bring Taylor in, the character of Taylor, into this series at this point? Because that would mean we'd have to push this. It couldn't be something that happened a few years after war. We're talking at that point, the evolution of the apes have gotten to the point where if we bring Taylor in with everything that we know, how do you now redesign that story to be sympathetic to the humans? Because that's where it gets tricky. Because that's where the turn has to happen now. Because with Taylor's whole thing was he had no idea he was on Earth. That was the whole thing. He thought he landed somewhere where the structure had changed.
And so the audience.
So now that we are along for the ride, and you know that, you know, we already know, like when Taylor lands, do they still continue with the ideology that he doesn't know where
he is?
Or is it that he is on this world? Because that's why I said I got to read the book. Because I think in the book, he wasn't on Earth.
He wasn't on Earth.
He was on a different planet.
Right.
Much like I think the Tim Burton version. Because I don't think he went to Earth. I think he got knocked onto an actual planet.
No, you're right.
It was a different planet because he had two suns.
So when he came back, whatever the devil happened in that Tim Burton movie, he somehow ended back up on Earth. In that crazed society where it was like, what the devil happened?
Right.
Which, thank God, we didn't get a sequel out of that to find out what happened.
Right.
But yeah, I'm pretty satisfied with that.
I'm curious to see if that's what they decide to do. Because the next logical step would be Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. They've already said they're going to make another movie, and they haven't come out with a title, but it's pretty...
Timelines and stuff, or alternative...
See, my thing is that I don't think they're going to go to where the book was, because the book, I don't want to give anything away, but they're doing space travel in the book.
Right, okay.
With the apes at that point. So I don't think we're going to jump that far.
Right.
I think we're definitely going to see the Icarus land and a version of Taylor. It's probably not going to be the same name, but a version of Taylor is going to land, and he's not going to know anything. And I think that that's going to be the fun of it. Like, everybody else knows, gets the joke, and he's the one person that doesn't get it yet. And he's probably going to figure out, like, halfway into the movie where he really is. And that's going to be the interesting thing, to see this human's reaction. And instead of us realizing it at the end and being like, oh my god, now we have to see somebody react to this information, and what does he do with it? Like, mm-hmm. Are you going to try to go back in time? Are you going to try to survive? Like, what do you do now? Like, I don't know. I find that really, really fascinating.
I might have missed this. Was there an explanation on whether there were actually more ape societies out there?
Yes. They mentioned it in War. They referenced the fact that
I'd say
there might be.
Yeah, just the fact that Bad Ape, that we find Bad Ape,
that we find Bad Ape,
is kind of a hint that we'll find.
Yeah, he actually had the power of speech, and other apes actually didn't have speech.
Right.
But he can actually.
So there's an actual evolution that's happening. Yes. It might be worldwide. We don't know. It might just be in America.
That's really fast.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you got. The way I picked up on Bad Ape was he was in the, at least the early part of his coming up. He was being taken care of.
Right.
Like, well. Because to the point where he didn't even have to develop, even though he was intelligent and could speak and could, like, figure stuff out and know he, you know, had to go pilfer some stuff and, you know, figure out survival. He wasn't, like, he still had, like, a childlike sophistication.
Right.
That you only, like, that to me, you only get that from really having things, really being nurtured.
Really nurtured, yeah.
Yeah, he was raised in the zoo.
Right, you know, so so I would imagine that there's going to be, well, I mean, now that they're all happy and being left alone and not being shot at, I mean,
hey.
Be fruitful and multiply, right?
Right.
And that's, you know. Kirk, before we started recording, we talked about how the little girl,
Nova,
was maybe felt a little shoehorned.
In
a little bit.
Yeah, I made a mistake. I thought Nova was like a, might be like an ongoing thing. I thought in the Tim Burton version that Nova was actually part of, you know, was the name of the female lead.
Right.
And it's not. It's Diana, I think.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I wonder if, you know, let me explain that, you know, you give her a name Nova, she can't talk. And you figure every, if they have a society going on, you'll have the Nova. Which is every, you know, any of all the humans, there's only one human that's allowed to speak to the higher ups of the apes, and that's the
right.
Nova. Because she was the only one that, so far, in all their dealings with humans, was the only one that survived, and she was dying, and she survived.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing.
And she ended up with him.
That's
what?
What it's fine.
Oh, she was sick.
Right, she's sick, but
she was sick,
I think
but it wasn't killing her.
It wasn't killing her.
It was just, it took away the power of speech and it dumbed them down.
Right.
But it wasn't killing them.
Right, but it didn't dumb her down.
It did dumb her down, but that's why she couldn't speak at all. But that's the interesting thing. Like, for the first time in this movie, we actually see that they're not stupid. Human beings can communicate. She learned how to do sign language.
Right.
So they just lost the power of speech and they regressed a little bit mentally.
Right.
But they still can communicate if you try to. So they're not completely dumb creatures.
Right.
They're just less of, they're just kind of where chimpanzees are now.
It's literally the reverse.
They're the chimpanzees now. So they can do basic, you know, commands.
So the Nova is the only human that is allowed to learn the sign language.
Maybe.
Right.
Maybe.
I mean, but shoehorned in, I kind of wanted, like, do we really need her?
From one end, maybe, because, I mean, after all, the movie is still for people, so people need someone to latch onto when they're watching a movie.
Sadly enough.
Because
the apes were totally characterized in such a manner that they were personifications.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, if I do believe she wasn't in the ape camp, I'd have been totally fine with it because the apes themselves have their own.
Yeah,
we'd
totally
be totally fine with
totally.
It. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know if other people would be. I don't know if the person cutting the check
right.
is thinking
right.
that's
you might
okay.
always need a human guide to kind of
right.
like go along
with,
you know. Yeah. But I do like the fact that they made her also the reason for the downfall.
Right. Well. She infected them with the dolls.
Yeah.
Wait, did I spoil it?
Yes.
Damn!
That's a big spoiler. But
sorry.
It is what it is.
Sorry, Mike. It's fine.
But I like the fact that they actually used that. The fact that they, and that doll, where in the original, it was the one that went, mama, and that was the thing that cued in everybody that, oh my God, humans could speak. And then later on, when we hear little Milo, the first word that he says is, mama, and that's like, oh my God, the apes can speak. And now suddenly we have that doll coming back from the original movie, and it's like, instead of it speaking, it's actually causing the lack of speech. So it's kind of like this weird like reversal of the role of the doll.
Yeah, that's a good part. Yeah.
So folks, we're pretty much almost to an hour here.
Okay. Wow.
And we managed to get through all of that.
Yeah.
So give yourselves a hand, fellas and lady. Very nice. So first of all, happy birthday, April Smith, who has joined our audience.
Happy birthday!
Yay! Let's do some social media and wrap this baby up, Kirk.
Hey, you know where Kirk Johnson, Facebook, my website, Two Lanes, Far Field. Come check it out. Twitter, Kirk Johnson at Arntura. And I'll add a nigga.
Very classy. All right, Mark.
As always. Who is MarkLAbbott.com? That's the website. Who is Mark Abbott? On Facebook and Twitter. You can go to any of those places, find out what I'm up to, new storytelling shows, that sort of thing.
That's right. Remember, Mark is an award-winning storyteller, folks. So when he does bring these things up, you should bring your ass, as they're saying at the parade right now. Taryn!
You can see some of our work at TarynLopez.com. Otherwise, I am on Facebook. Just look up Taryn Lopez, spelled T-A-R-A-N. That's about it.
Sweet. I'm all over social media myself, mostly at LaughingBlackVampire.com, but of course on Facebook, just use my old Stephen Van Patten, that you should be able to find me. I'm the only one that, you know, has a few vampire novels out and occasionally stage manages a TV show, so I'm kind of easy to find.
Uh-huh.
Instagram, Twitter, at SVP Thinks. Want to give a big shout out to Scream Radio.
Yes.
They are experiencing a great deal of success this week, getting a lot of listeners, and they air Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans episodes randomly about twice a day, which is nice for us.
Scream Radio
S-C-R-M.
Scream Radio. Facebook, guys.
Yes.
Check them out on Facebook. Check them out on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Tracy C.
Yes, she is running the show over there, and she is doing a damn good job.
Thank you, Tracy.
So, want to let everybody else know that the four of us will also be...
We're going to be at...
Black Book Expo.
Nice.
September 23rd, people. We will do a show there also, hopefully without getting on people's nerves like we may be doing here in Juniors right now. Maybe. We would hope. And that's kind of it. I should give the address. It's 5th Avenue off of 125th Street up in Harlem. It's going to be a good time. I'm also going to be selling books.
I'll be selling some as well.
And Mark will be selling books.
Under what publishing? You got Laughing Vampire, right?
Laughing Black Vampire is me.
And Hobcat.
But actually, because that would have been real confusing in the paperwork. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's just me and Mark. Our names will be up on the marquee for those people that are actually going to show up looking for us.
Fancy.
Totally.
We have a band.
I'll bring a harmonica.
A harmonica, oh, man.
Get like
Family Black Cat or something. Like, I'm just saying, man, I got friends.
Well, if you can sneak them in and they buy some tickets,
all right. See what I'll call that a stereo system.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I can DJ. They won't mind that.
You'll love it. Yeah. Bill Cosby and
Bo Keith Woodbine.
And
Quincy Jones.
Nice. Nice.
They did an album together back in the day.
Like Ozbine.
Oh, God.
What did you say?
Ozbine.
Oh, God.
Oh. That's right.
Yo,
so,
you want to drink some of this?
Shut up.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, we are going to close out this particular episode of Beef, Wine, and Shenanigans. Thank you so much for listening. Big thanks to Grace, April, and Brian for acting as our three-person audience. We appreciate that. Even though it's very hard to say whether or not they actually give a damn about Planet of the Apes, it is good that they're here.
Right. Juniors was their draw.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Where y'all going to be?
Yeah, right.
Where y'all Oh, June. Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. I'll be there. Yeah.
Yeah. Planet of the what? Planet of the who?
Exactly.
Why did you have a planet?
The Blues Brothers. Shit. They still owe you money, fool. All right. Well, we're going to close it out. Thank you so much. And... Happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day.
Mass it up. Mass up. Mass up.
I can't.